Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Engage to Flourish podcast. This is Damon, I got Brett, and I got Kyle here with me. And we have a very special episode today. We've been asking people to send in questions for our podcast, and we would try to address them and answer them. And we actually got quite a few from a few people this week, and so we wanted to address them. So we're continuing our series on the awe of God, and yeah, some of these questions are pretty heavy. So we actually did quite a bit of research this week.
And we brought in our heavy hitter. Brett knows all the answers.
No way. This is a classic example of, are you sure you're ready for what you ask for? Us asking for people to send in questions, and now here we go.
Yeah, so we are continuing our series on awe of God. And like we've been talking about, there is a lot of meat to chew on in this series, especially thinking about just the how big, how mighty, how awesome God is. And yeah, some of these questions have to deal with that. So I thought, why waste any time? We should just get started on our questions, and so we can address them. So Kyle, would you like to kick us off with one of the questions that was asked?
I will ask the first one because that means I don't have to answer the first one right away. All right. First one was, okay, on page 83 of the book, it said, John Bevere writes, the way we live as believers determines how we will live in the forever. And to give him full credit, he had way and how italicized. So the way we live as believers determines how we will live in the forever. The person that asked the question kind of went on to say, we understand that there will be rewards in heaven, and maybe nobody has this answer, but what do you think these rewards are? Are they jobs? And if they're jobs, are they kind of hierarchical? So how do you guys want to kick off answering that one?
Yeah, Brett, how do you want to kick off answering that one?
I'm going to say, I don't know. I think it's a good question.
Let me add one more thing, because actually in the book, there's one sentence right before that, because he says, so in essence, what we do with the cross determines where we will spend eternity. So that's the first part. It's the salvation part. So it's where, but then this is for those that put their faith in Jesus. So then that determines, so the way we live then determines how we live in eternity. So there's a two-part to it. So this isn't about salvation and our stuff on earth, like earning us a spot in heaven. So I just wanted to clarify that. And now I just totally threw Brett off.
So the question is the way we live as believers determines how we'll live in forever. And the question is, what do you think these rewards are? And if they are jobs, I'm not sure. I never really thought of having a quote unquote job in heaven. I guess my frame of heaven has changed just in reading and thinking, and even some of this conversation and preparing. I think like cartoons or movies or whatever, right? They paint it in this certain picture where you're just chilling in the clouds or whatever it might be. But I think one thing that I've been sitting with that in some ways kind of, or doesn't answer this, but it kind of speaks about it, is the rewards. I think everybody has a certain picture of like what the reward could be, or when you say reward, like what comes to mind? Whether it's like material things like gold or something super awesome, or it's like a reward could be like a certificate or like some sort of something that signals that you have accomplished something. I think I've had to actually for myself take a step back in trying to like figure out in my head like what that exact reward is. I recently had a conversation with Pastor Barry where I was struggling with some of like what is like fair or living your life like with certain consequences and thinking about God's character and all that. And one thing he told me was the things that are, he believes the things that are stolen, that are lost, that are killed, like here, like God redeems on the other side of heaven. And so even in that picture, to me, that is a reward. It doesn't go for like not. And so part of this idea for like, what are the rewards? I can't personally say if I haven't done enough research to know if like, if it's a quote unquote job, but I do think that it's like, just how I see it is like, there's goodness. And so whether it is a job, whether it's how I get to spend eternity with the Lord, whether it's just being in his presence and all that it comes with that I can't even fathom, I see all of those things as the quote unquote reward. I've tried to wrestle with like kind of more like if this, then I get this reward, and try to pencil in different things like, oh, if I do this deed, then maybe I'll get this. Or if I do this, maybe I'll be blessed with this. Or if I've had to deal with this struggle, then I'll get rewarded in this way. And it's probably not so formulaic. And so to be honest, I don't know what the rewards are. It's something I would have to wrestle with, sit with more and research. But I've been wrestling with the hope of having rewards that are things that like I don't understand or expect, but due to the nature of who God is in things that have been stolen or lost or killed or destroyed, the things that the enemy tries to take away, knowing that there's a reward that like what was lost doesn't, it pales in comparison to the reward that God has, is like, okay, I can put my hope and trust in that, even though I don't know what it is specifically, is something that I've personally in this current day have had to wrestle with and am wrestling with right now.
So it sounds like then that's putting more trust in God's character, even if you don't understand it fully, that you know he's good and all of that. So even if you can't comprehend it, you just know that I'll have to just wait and see what it looks like, but I trust that I can put my hope in that.
Yeah, and I think there's times where I will naturally doubt, be like, dang, this is not fair. Like, this sucks, or that's not fair.
Yeah.
And we talked about it a little bit earlier, but one thing that I have to go back, remind myself is like, if I trust that God knows what's best for me, then even my assumption or my, what I feel like is a proportionate reward for whatever, I could be right. I could be totally off. And so what he deems as good or what he sees as righteous or what he feels like is a proper reward it's something that I can't conceptualize. I'm never going to be able to conceptualize that fully. And so even if I have a good idea of like, oh, this would be an awesome reward if God gave it to me, I don't know if it's fair to say that that's what he would give to me. I have to be open to knowing that, okay, I do trust that he has for me. And so whatever that is, when I get to experience it or receive it, it's going to be good. Like regardless, because I doubt in my mindset when I get to heaven before God and he gives me a reward, whatever it looks like, or he says whatever to me, I'm going to be like, really? That's it? Like, I doubt that. I just doubt, like, in my own mind, sometimes I feel that way, but I doubt that that's how I will be there.
How about you, Damon? Like, thoughts on this type of question? Because it doesn't have to even be specifically answering this question, but just in this general concept.
So for me, when I was thinking about this question, the first thing that came to mind was, why is he putting this in this section? And so as I was thinking about it, one of the things that came to mind was, a lot of times when we talk, okay, maybe not we as in like our church, but I think in the world, when people talk about heaven, really what they're talking about is it's not hell, right? So our picture and our concept of heaven is kind of like Brett was sharing earlier with you know, cartoons were floating on the clouds, and so it's not a very exciting. It's not a very what's the word that
inspiring?
It's not something that we're necessarily looking forward to, but we know that it's not hell. We're not burning up in the lake of fire, right?
Oh, no, I would look forward to that. If I got to just chill with Jesus, I'd be down.
Okay, well, for a lot of people, it's not a very compelling picture, right? But it's not hell, right? We're not burning in the lake of fire and eternal damnation and all that stuff. So really, I think for a lot of people, when they live their life, or it's like, okay, I accept Jesus. That's my ticket out of the lake of fire, and now I can do whatever I want because I'm safe. It's like fire insurance, right? It's like if I were to die tomorrow, at least I'm not going to that place. Heaven's got to be better than whatever that is, right? And so I think there's not really it doesn't help our motivation to live a holy life if that's our picture of what heaven is. Mm. And so I think that's part of what he's trying to get here, is like, we need to shift our perspective on what heaven even looks like. Mm. And so he introduces some concepts, and maybe sometimes he's even hyperbolic in some of the things, the pictures or the imagery that he uses, just to paint the picture for us that our imagery of it's not being hell is... it's lacking.
It doesn't do justice.
Yeah, for what heaven's actually going to be like. And he's trying to paint a better picture, a more inspiring, a more compelling picture for us. And part of that is looking through the Bible and recognizing it does seem like there are some types of rewards that are given to people when they get there, right? And so, you know, Jesus gives the parable of the talents, right? Jesus tells some other different stories of people receiving what they're due. If we look at, so we also, as in doing some research, we did try to find some verses and things like that. So let me see, which one was I looking at?
Apparently we had too many verses.
I know. Okay. So this is, I believe, this is Colossians 3:23. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving. So it does seem like there is some type of reward for living our life for him while we're on earth, right? What is that reward? It's not necessarily specific to saying what it is, but living our life for the Lord, we'll receive something. And so if that's the case, would we want to live our life so that we can get a larger or a more? I think that's kind of what he's implying, that there is some type of motivation in that to work for the Lord, right? As opposed to, okay, I'm just going to kind of phone it in. I'm saved. I'm good. And so if we were to kind of extrapolate that out, right, if everybody is living for the Lord, then what is the world going to look like? Mm. And how is that going to shift the way that our world that we're living in today looks? If everybody's living for the Lord, then it will look like a place that's full of the fruit of the Spirit.
Heaven on earth.
It'll look like bringing heaven to earth, right? And so we don't have to wait until we die to experience heaven. We'll be experiencing parts of heaven now, because people, as they're living for the Lord, are bringing heaven to earth, and we're getting to experience that now. So it's not like something we have to wait for till later. It's something that we get a chance to participate in and be a part of building that here before we die. And so I think in terms of that, it's like, as we experience more of what that looks like, whether it could be healing and wholeness, it could be other things that we're able to experience, more of the fruit of the Spirit now, we're getting a taste of heaven, and that gives us a glimpse of what it's like. And it actually, as we taste, it's like, I want more of that. I want more of that. And then when we get to heaven, we're going to experience the fullness of what that looks like. Mm.
Yeah. I think it's really good to just expand our thinking and comprehension of it, of what heaven looks like. And I think in some ways I'm envisioning rewards to be, part of our reward is responsibility. And I think in our earthly thing, that can sound like, I don't want that. I don't want responsibility. That's like a burden or a weight. But it's actually, I think, could be tied in with what our character is showing that we're capable of handling and being responsible for on earth. Then in heaven, I think that's where it could relate to jobs. But I wouldn't say jobs. I would say tasks. So we have, we're rewarded with different levels of tasks based on what we've done with our life here on earth. Mm. And so I think if you look at it that way, it maybe takes a little bit of the fleshly negative view of, oh, I have to do a job in heaven. But it's like, no, I get to have the responsibility of having tasks to do in God's kingdom, in God's new, the restored earth. And I think that has a different aspect to it. And it ties in with, you know, like the parable of the talents where, you know, we're all given different levels of abilities, and what we do with those then determines our character, and then what we are responsible for, then we're given more accordingly. And so I think if we use that as a framework too, then it kind of ties in with that same concept. And that parable, it's talking about the kingdom of heaven is like this. So the kingdom of heaven is like, well, we all have different levels of ability, and that's what we're going to be responsible for.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast by John Mark. So I have started listening to a few podcasts, not as to the extent that I was before, but there That's are a few, good. If I feel like the Lord is highlighting one. So I was listening to one this morning, and he was talking about how in our Western culture, a lot of people are pursuing happiness. Mm. And really, that's kind of like a faulty pursuit, because we can't really attain that. But he said, really, what we should be pursuing is meaning. And I think that's part of what this picture of what Kyle's talking about in heaven with tasks and things. It's like there are going to be meaningful things for us to do mm-hmm. in heaven. It's not just going to be a meaningless experience for us. There's going to be meaningful things for us to do there.
Did you have something, Brett?
I could go out there.
Well, I was going to say, I think that's good then to remember like what the Garden of Eden was like. So if we have that framework, like that's humanity in its perfection and creation in its perfection. Mm. And they had tasks. They were to tend to the garden, to do stuff with the animals. So, I mean, they had jobs, so to speak, but they had responsibilities, and there's nothing wrong with that. But after the fall, those things came with very negative connotation. So I think if we go back to that, view or that image, that's going to help us have a little bit better idea of what heaven could look like. It's still very much, it's a similar concept, but the new heaven and the new earth are described way differently. But I think that same concept of, oh yeah, we were designed for tasks and to like work alongside the Lord.
Yeah, I was going to add, I think changing our perspective on the reward and Damon, even you describing sometimes how we can view heaven. I think part of that lends to be a good thing to go hand in hand with the concept of healthy fear and the awe of God, in that you know, the awe of God or having a healthy fear could be a concept in itself where it's kind of like, why should I do that? Mm-hmm. Or what's the point? And sometimes, you know, the simple answer of like, oh, so that you could be more like Jesus, or so that is not, I don't want to say it's not good enough, but it's kind of like, okay, I don't know how, or I don't know what. And so I think there is a part of it of, you're talking about character, integrity, mm-hmm. and who you are. It does, to me, lend itself to go hand in hand with understanding a healthy fear of the Lord, having an awe of God, which I think is the bigger purpose he's talking about. And mm-hmm. so to kind of separate it is, I don't want to say unfair, but it does single out this concept of like rewards, and it makes it feel more action oriented in mm-hmm. terms of like almost works based. But then if you look at, if I feel like for me, if I look at it in the grand scheme of the awe of God and having a healthy fear of the Lord, mm-hmm. it's like one part of it. Mm. It's not like the only thing where it's like, okay, then that means you have to do this, this, and this, or else you don't get these rewards. It's a part of emphasizing kind of like some of the why to have a healthy fear of the Lord. That can be ambiguous. I think it gives at least some frame of reference to in trying to understand the bigger picture of having an awe of God, having a healthy fear. And then the second thing, in terms of like responsibilities and whatnot, a Bible verse that always comes to mind that I think of too is like, I know Pastor Barry has expressed it as being the pastor of the church and he feels responsibility, right? The responsibility he feels for his body, the sheep that are following him too, is greater than the average, you know, person who attends. And then for myself, like even helping out with children or teaching the youth, like there's Bible verses that talk about if you're a teacher or you're the one that's it has that responsibility, you're held to a different standard because of the responsibility that God has given you or that has been in your serving the Lord. And so I don't think it would just be only like, okay, if you are held to this different standard, it's not just from a punishment standpoint of trying to make you scared of like, you better be careful everything you say you do. But there is a level of like, you are given this responsibility that God sees as valuable. And so what you do with it is also important. Mm-hmm. And so with that comes a higher level of, I don't want to say expectation, but almost like a standard that God wants for us. Mm-hmm. So that does come with, okay, if you don't do that well, there is some sort of consequence for that, or there is some ramification. But if you also are able to do that well and live according to what God calls, I don't think it's just like for nothing, mm-hmm. right? It's not just going to be a, okay, I'm watching to see if you cross that line. And anytime you cross it, okay, you just get punished. But there's also like you're good and faithful servant, right? Mm-hmm. Like in what that person has done, in the teacher, in the pastor, in the children ministry leader, whatever it is, I do think if God is going to point it out and say that there is some regard to it, then I think there's purpose for that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when we think about rewards too, one of the ways to look at it is also when you are doing things for the Lord, you're not going to go unrewarded, right? Because I think that's, for a lot of us, that's some of the weighing the factor of should I do this or not? It's like, oh, should I go spend this amount of time doing this work? What am I going to get out of it, right? And it's like, is it going to go wasted? Am I going to get nothing out of it? What's the purpose? And I think what he's talking about is just to recognize, like, you're not going to go unrewarded for your effort. Because I think that's one of the ways that we can get discouraged into not doing things is because I'm going to work so hard and I'm not going to get anything out of it. So I think by recognizing that there are rewards, it's so that we don't get to that place of discouragement and say, I'm going to do all this stuff and then I'm going to get the same thing as somebody else. It's like, no, there will be rewards. It will be, but it will be just, right? And God's justice might be different than our justice, but we're thinking about it from a certain perspective too.
Yeah, and then there's delayed gratification, right? There's, in chapter 4, so I'm reading that this week, and then he starts talking about obeying God. And so one of the days is obey God even if you don't see the benefits. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh man, those ones are harder.
Oh gosh.
But then then ultimately in this discussion about rewards, it's really having an eternal perspective, because then you might not see it now, but there's something that's going to get rewarded if you do it with the right heart, right? So it's not that it's an ultimate delayed gratification. It's at the end of your life. But really, if you think about it for eternity, it's like, oh man, that's a reward that's going to last forever versus, oh, I might get a little something now. I'm like, okay, it's hard in the moment, but okay, I'd rather have the delayed gratification and that reward versus the quick little fix.
Yeah, that one is, that's tough, because part of that, and not to branch off to another conversation, but that's part of like denying the flesh too.
Yeah.
Right? Because fleshly, it's like, I don't really know what that could be. It'd be nice to just enjoy a reward right now.
And I think the Lord is good. We do get those. Mm-hmm. But there's times when it's like, I think it's a character check too.
Yes, yes.
Like, okay, I've been giving you those, but what if I don't right now? How are you going to respond?
Yeah.
You're going to pout and
yeah, we had a conversation. I won't bring up what it was, but about character, right? It's like, are you doing it just for the reward?
Yeah,
right. Or are you doing it because, you know, you do have a conviction or you do have that faith and belief, and that's why you're doing, not just so that what you could get out of it.
Yeah, you're just being obedient because that the Lord asked you to do it, and okay, if you want me to do it, mm-hmm. I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think too, sometimes we get caught up in like competition and comparison, mm-hmm. right? So when we think of like hierarchical things later on, it's like, okay, well, are we just comparing, like that means that that person's better than me, mm-hmm. or things like that. So even thinking about heaven and hell and all of these things after death, conceptually back, you know, Old Testament times, they didn't even have a concept for after what happens to you after you die. Mm. All the consequences to sin and things like that, righteous living, were evidenced in the here and now, right? So they would say things like, why is that child born paralyzed?
Oh,
yeah. Oh, well, it's because of the sins of his father or his sins of someone in his generation. So there was a immediate or pretty soon consequence for their sin and things like that. But it didn't come till the story about Job, where he was a righteous man and then all this stuff mm-hmm. happened to him. And people started to question, like, okay, we recognize Job is righteous. God even recognized that Job was righteous. What's going to, like, if he's righteous and all this bad stuff is going to happen to him, is he ever going to get, like, compensated or, you know, rewarded for his character? And so that's where people started to start thinking about this concept of there's got to be something that happens to us after we die. This concept of, like, even thinking about afterlife and things like that. So for me, as I've been processing this too and thinking about rewards or what happens, you know, one of the people that comes to mind is Pastor L, who visited our church. It was last year or might have been the year before.
A little over a year ago, yeah.
And he shared a little bit about his life story, right? And he was born in China. He's a believer. He started thousands of churches, and he's constantly on the run for his life because in China, Christians are persecuted. And when I look at it, it's like, yeah, when he gets to heaven, I hope he gets rewarded for the things that he's done for the Lord. Like, from my perspective, like, I want him to get, you know, the Lord to say, well done, good and faithful servant, and to pour out his blessings upon him when he gets there, because his life was hard, and he still persevered, he overcame, and he was, you know, bringing thousands of churches to life. So that means he's bringing thousands, maybe millions of people to the Lord. Like, I hope that he does. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of it, is sometimes we get in this difficulty in terms of comparison. Like, oh, that means that this person's better. But in the family of the Lord, I feel like the Lord wants us to be cheering for each other. Mm. Right? Like, I want to see Kyle get the most rewards that in his, you know, when he meets the Lord at the judgment seat. I want to see Brett get the most rewards when he, and the more that they get, I'm cheering them on. Like, it's not like, oh, I need to get more than them so I could show that I did more in my life. But it's more like, no, I want to see them get the most that they can get, because this is my family. I want to see them, you know, be rewarded for the things that they did on earth. And I think sometimes the enemy tries to get in that mm-hmm. place of comparison, competition, things like that, to kind of hinder us from cheering each other on and taking us to places that we couldn't go ourselves.
Yeah, we're on one question and we're this far in already. It's going to be a
Well, I think the second question, we kind of addressed it a little bit.
We did. I just wanted to just move to that one really quick. On page 83, he also talks about too many have the, this is a quote from the book, too many have the concept of heaven consisting of nothing more than a disembodied, non-physical experience with love, peace, and no suffering accompanying it. They anticipate saints being ethereal beings floating on clouds, playing harps, and eating grapes. Still others view heaven as one dull, nonstop worship service. But these are myths found nowhere in scripture. And I know there's a couple people wrote in about, well, it says we're going to be worshiping the Lord all the time. So he's kind of contradicting that. But I think I wanted to point this one out because we have to be careful when we're reading some of these, especially this section from John Bevere. He's not there to defend himself for one thing, but he specifically said that people see it as a nonstop worship service. And I've actually personally held that in the past because I've heard it described that way. Mm. Oh, we're just going to be worshiping all the time. But the way it was described was like a worship service. I'm like, okay, so we're just going to be in a worship service 24/7 for the rest of my life.
We're going to be sitting in pews.
But I mean, in a sense, it's like, wow, that when you see that, when you kind of put yourself in that position, it's like, oh, that's going to be awesome. But then it's like, really? All the time? So he's just pointing out that, no, that's not, we're constantly worshiping, but we can worship while we're doing tasks, while we're doing quote unquote jobs, or we have these different responsibilities. We can still have a heart and act of worship. So I don't think he's disagreeing with those other scriptures, but I think he's trying to make sure that people have this right view of, it's not just sitting in a worship service. Like we're going to be doing things, just like in the Garden of Eden. They were still worshiping because everything was perfect. Like that's a part of being in nature was an act of worship and taking care of it. So there's going to be that aspect that we can't throw out with a faulty view of just what worship looks like. Mm. I think limited view of what worship looks like.
I think too, a lot of times we associate worship with singing.
Yeah, true.
Right. And
true.
So there are other ways to worship, right? Like our work can be our worship. Completing our task can be our worship, right? Running the race for the Lord, that can be our worship. I think a lot of times in our society, in our culture, we associate worship with just singing,
yes,
or worship with being in service. And there's so many more aspects of worship that we're discounting when we have that view. So I think if we expand our perspective on what worship is and what worship can be, it's like, hey, we're talking on the podcast. Well, this is one way that we're worshiping the Lord because we're trying to bring other people into more alignment with who he is, right? And so there's whatever you're doing can be worship, doesn't have to be just when you're singing.
Yeah, and I mean, coming from like the business side, like worship can be how you spend your money, or just spending money can be worship. If you do it in the way the Lord's asking you to do it, it's like, oh, I just worshiped him by using his resources the way he asked me to.
I agree.
All right. You want to keep on moving on?
So when we were talking about that, prepping for this, the image I got was the seven dwarfs when they're singing, oh, yeah, hi ho, right, hi ho, right, right, it's right. Off to work we go, right? And they're singing the whole time, right? It's like they're doing their work, but they're singing like, what if that's what it looks like for us, right? Mm. We have this heart and spirit of worship that's, these songs and these worship things, acts are coming out of us while we're doing whatever task we're doing. Mm.
So I think continuing, there's, I think another part too where people got a little bit tripped up with some of the wording he used. And I think you said earlier, Damon, like it seems like he's using hyperbole to try to kind of shake people beyond the just boring view of what heaven, or a simple view, let's say that. And so there were some things he's like, oh, there's going to be communities to plan, cities to build, nations to oversee. And he said galaxies to explore and develop. And I think there's a typo here. And then that's going to align with how we are created to live. There are positions of responsibility. And he goes on. And I think definitely the galaxies to explore. I first read it, I actually had the same response as a couple people that wrote about it. I'm like, okay, that doesn't seem right. Like I was able to discount it and just keep reading. And as I read the rest of the
I thought one person's response was actually pretty funny. Do you think without naming this person, we could give the response?
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. Sure, I'll let you say that in a second. But as I was able to skip past it and not let it hold me up, because then as I finished reading the rest of this this day's devotional, I'm like, oh no, I get the heart of what he's trying to do. And so I didn't let it become distracting. And I still then went back and like, okay, he's not here to defend himself. I don't know what he meant by it. But I think with all of his other teachings and his way, I'm like, okay, I don't agree with him inserting it. I don't think it was necessary, and I thought it brought more confusion. Mm-hmm. But I trust that he wasn't also trying to bring some kind of faulty view of the Bible. So that was how I took it and used it. But yeah, Damon, why don't you share that? Because I thought, I can see how people have this kind of response.
Okay, so I thought this was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a good response. I enjoyed it.
Just say, because it's too good.
Okay, so regarding the galaxies, this person said out loud, "What in the Mormon is he talking about?"
Johnny B talking crazy.
Yeah, well, why don't you explain that aspect of why that's...
So part of the Mormon faith is that they believe that if they do a good job while they're on Earth, then when they get to heaven, they'll be given galaxies and other planets to rule. And so when he mentioned galaxies, I think that came to mind for that person. One of the interesting things, as we were talking about and prepping for this episode, we were talking about the size of the city of New Jerusalem.
Yes.
And so,
12,000 stadia.
Yeah, 12,000 stadia.
Boom.
And we were kind of talking about
what does that mean?
How many feet is that?
Yeah, what does that mean?
That's all I know. It's in the Bible. Man, that's big. It's got to be like more than 5 feet. Right?
That we're not sure of. When we think of heaven, a lot of times we're not sure of what that looks like or how big it is or what it looks like. So the 12,000 stadia is referring to the New Jerusalem that is referenced in Revelation chapter 21. And 12,000 stadia is actually about 1,400 miles or 2,200 kilometers. And the description in Revelation 21
thanks for adding kilometers, because that helps.
I don't know. I know that sometimes Olivia listens.
Oh, okay, right? True. Okay, and true.
Olivia Wogan listens, right? And she's from the UK.
That's
and
true.
They measure.
All right, thank you.
And so we have people that are out of country that might be...
Zip it. I was just trying to be humorous, but I'll zip it.
Okay, so with that size, it says that it's that long, that wide, and that tall.
Yeah.
So 1,400 miles tall. That's pretty far.
That's like in a different atmosphere, right?
I believe so.
I think it's like 500 miles to get out of our atmosphere or something. Like, does that sound right? Oh man, I should look that up.
Okay, so with that, I think he's probably using hyperbole to kind of get people's attention that heaven is not what a lot of people think about it. But if we go directly to Revelation chapter 21 and its description, the city's pretty tall. So he might be using hyperbole, but I think there are also aspects of it that there's things that we don't understand in our human perspective, that the grandeur of what heaven's going to look like. And
it's funny for me going over that. I hadn't realized that. I think a lot of the picture painted in my head is actually that heaven is like boundless. Mm. And so to understand that there is almost like a boundary is kind of coming from the opposite side, where it's like, most of the time you just think of it as like, it goes forever.
Infinite.
Yeah, it just goes forever, or it's just up in the sky somewhere and it's just super expensive. But to understand that there is like a quote unquote boundary was something different for me to even recognize.
And I think too, when we look at Revelation 21, it talks about a new heaven and a new earth, right? And so our kind of our final destination is not necessarily in the ethereal heaven. Mm-hmm. It's to live on the renewed earth. Mm. And part of that is being in the city, which is the New Jerusalem, which is what we described earlier with the 1,400 miles wide, long and tall.
Yeah, so it's going back to the Genesis.
Pre-sin.
Well, like the Genesis, yeah, like it's the restored earth the way it was intended to be.
Yeah. Right?
Okay, so I just looked. This actually might blow people's minds. So actually, to get to space, it's in the 50 to 60 mile range to get to outer space.
Oh my
so we're talking 1,400 miles high. So that's why, like, I can't comprehend that. Is that Earth itself is this city? So that's like, I mean, the Earth is bigger than that. But it's like, I don't know. And there's things in the Bible where it's like, okay, I could go down a big rabbit hole and try to figure it out, or I'm like, okay, well, I don't need to know it. I know enough to be like, wow, that's like, that's an awesome God that we serve. Because how, you know? But I'm like, okay, I don't need to go any further than that. But it does show that there's things that are just really beyond the limits of what we can grasp or comprehend.
I learned something today. So if someone ever asks me, I'll just be like, you see how tall it is from here to where, you see where that plane is flying? Yeah, just think bigger.
It's just beyond that. Yeah.
You see how, you think how big this space is? You think of a RIP to Staples Center, but crypto.com or the new Intuit Dome? Think that, but just bigger.
All right, Kyle, you want to lead off with a new question?
Right, I guess I'm on the question part. Okay, let's see. I think there was some more just questions about the idea of rewards and the, I think we haven't talked about the judgment seat. So it seems like at the judgment seat, all of our stuff gets brought out.
Nice.
The good, the bad, maybe like the sins of commission, the sins of omission, the things we did wrong, but the things that, oh, you had this ability to do this and you didn't do it, so things we didn't step into, all of that's going to be laid bare. How does that fit? Like, how does that fit within, well, then from there we enter heaven. Like, if we have Jesus and we have his blood, it covers all of that, and then we're good. But is there a sense of regret at that time? Like, oh, I guess I didn't do as good as I thought, or I didn't do as much as I, or even some of it, like, oh, I forgot I did. Oh, that actually was a reward or a blessing to you, God. Like, you see that as just that little act of kindness I did. Like, oh, I thought that was just how I was just normally supposed to be. So maybe there's even some of those, like, oh, I actually did some more than I thought. But I think there's that thing of, okay, are we so-called chasing these rewards then? Is that seems to be countering the Bible of, like, well, it's by grace that we're saved, but then, see, it's, I think they were reading that John Bevere switched a little bit to, like, oh, is this starting to then make it about striving and earning about these rewards? So what do you guys think on that?
Well, I think the question too talked about our motivation being the fear of the Lord. So the motivation for living a holy life is the fear of the Lord. And then in this section, it did seem like there were aspects of it where he's recognizing that there's rewards. And so I guess kind of for lack of better words, fear of that becoming our motivation instead of the motivation being the fear of the Lord. Right. And so I do feel like they go together, right? Mm-hmm. The fear of the Lord and having that as our motivation, but then also recognizing that when we do things for the Lord, we're not going to go unrewarded for the things that we do. One of the things that came to mind as we were talking about this is, for much of church history, there was kind of an in-between period from after you die to, like, heaven. Right. And so for much of church history, like pre-Protestant Reformation, right, there was this concept of purgatory. Right. And it's very associated with Catholicism. It's one of the tenets of Catholicism that didn't come over with Protestant.
Yeah.
but I don't think that the concept was really the issue with it. It was really the way the church was using the issue. So in the Protestant Reformation, one of the big issues was this idea of purgatory. But what the church was doing was, the church was saying, if you pay indulgences and pay us this amount of money, then that'll get you out of purgatory, or get you out of purgatory earlier.
Right? Yeah.
Right. So you won't have to stay in purgatory as long, and you'll get to go to heaven sooner.
Right.
So it was a way that the church was trying to just bleed people for money so that they could get out of purgatory. But the concept of purgatory was that, really, there's a gap in our character between the time that we die and what it looks like in heaven. And so this time of being in purgatory was a time of cleansing, of purging. So that's why it's called purgatory, of purging some of the gap in our character during that season, so that when we get to heaven, there is that perfection of our character. So what purgatory is just kind of this in-between time. But we don't have a concept for that in Protestant faith now. So for us, our picture is, right, like death, heaven right away, right? And so it's interesting kind of thinking about the two and how there's a difference and how there could be a gap. And I'm not saying that there is purgatory there or there isn't, but for a lot of church history, you know, the Reformation was in the 1600s. So a lot of church history, that was a big concept, that there is a place that we go to in between. And even before that, there was a place called Abraham's Bosom that they believed that people of faith, because this is, you know, for people of Israel before.
That sounds wild, though.
Going to Abraham's bosom?
Yeah, that sounds wild.
Yeah. So there's...
You don't use that kind of vocabulary in your daily life?
I was going to not say anything, but I was like, I can't just not say anything. I was like, that's
okay.
Wild.
Okay, well, so even before that, right, there, before Jesus died and rose from the dead, right, there was no salvation for people because he wasn't crucified and risen yet, right? So what happens to those people? Mm. And there was this concept of they would go to Abraham's bosom, basically go be with where Abraham is. That's where they're going to be. But it wasn't this concept of heaven because there wasn't justification yet. There wasn't salvation yet at that time. And that's what the Messiah was supposed to bring. That's what Jesus was supposed to bring. And so, which he did, right? So now we have access to the Father. We have access to that. But
okay, so how do you want to wrap this all back into that question that the reader or the email had?
What was the question again?
that's what I'm like, where are you going with? Well, no, just like the motivation and the
judgment seat and...
Oh, okay, so at the judgment seat, that's where we're revealed for where we are, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we're revealed and there are still all these gaps or there's still all these things, is there a possibility that we're not automatically like granted entrance, right? There's the season that there needs to be this purging of, and that's part of church history that that's been there. And so we're looking at it through a specific lens of a 2000s, you know, church belief system. And that kind of discounts some of the previous church history too. And so that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that one way or another, but I'm saying, is there an opening to look at previous church history and what other people believed prior to the season that we're in right now? Because even thinking about things like when we talk about jobs in heaven or things like that, it's like two income households nowadays, that's a fairly in history a new thing, right? That's late 1900s type thing. Prior to that, it was all single income, single, you know, the men would go out to work and the women would take care of the house. So we're looking at things through a specific lens through our context and our time period that we're in. And I'm just saying, let's be open to looking at things through the lens of history and the ways that other people have believed and not just what we've been taught right now.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's a good reminder because especially with this concept of heaven, I think it's referenced and it's described at different places in the Bible, but it's not like a clear cut image where it just makes sense. And even looking at it, when the Bible was written and then that society and what cities look like and all of that versus what we have today, if I was living back then and read John's words about that the 12,000 stadia and all of that, that's like, oh, that's going to be mind blowing. Whereas even now we can travel across the world in, you know, such a quick amount of time, where back then maybe that's in a sense hyperbolic. It's the whole thing. It is maybe
it is infinite.
Almost, yeah. Maybe it doesn't have boundary because for them, like that would just seem like that. There is no boundary to that. That's so far.
I could never walk all the way to the other side.
Yeah, so that's good. Brett, do you have any thoughts?
I think in all it's good what you said right now is trying to take a look at our perspective. And I think the questions do a good job. And I think it's awesome that these people are taking some of these things and really wrestling with them. Mm-hmm. And so I think just to continue to encourage people that, yeah, I feel like in part of this, and even us, well, okay, you guys did a lot. I'll give you guys more props. You guys did a lot, way more research than I did. I'll be honest. I did not research a ton. But I think in that, it's even showing a healthy way to engage and wrestle with the Lord and with community in things that matter in terms of understanding your faith, what you believe, how trying to better understand God and how he works. And so in that, I think Damon just bringing up the lenses that we look at the perspectives, it's easy for us to come from our own perspective, which is valid because that's what we're reading, that's where we are. But to have that in the back of our mind to know like, okay, let me try to explore this and also look at different perspectives or what could they be referring to? Or, you know, just looking at it in a different way from just our vein, I think it's a healthy reminder to see how we can gain different or better insight or get a greater understanding, even if we don't fully know or can pinpoint exactly what it is. I think it can encourage us and draw us closer to in understanding the Lord and who he is, even with some of these tough questions like this. Because I know it could be very easy to just like almost ignore it and not even mm-hmm. try to engage with it. And so I am just, well, when I first heard it, I was just like, oh boy, maybe you should get somebody else on the podcast besides me. But I think even in engaging in this and discussing it, it shows it's a good way to, yeah, wrestle with the Lord and wrestle with some of our thoughts and how we can try to comprehend some of these things.
I think especially in this series, you know, we're just barely halfway through, and then small groups aren't even halfway through it yet, most of them. That
we're only on week one.
I haven't even gotten to this point in my own small group yet.
You're almost there.
Yeah.
So I mean, we're just barely getting into it. So I think one of the things I wanted to bring up is just to be careful. One is, I think on two ways, not just taking everything John Bevere says and saying like, oh yeah, that's exactly how it is. Because I think even Pastor Barry said to us as staff, like, yeah, I want to do this series, but it's hard because there's certain things I don't necessarily agree with that mm-hmm. he says. And so I'm like, okay, cool. I mean, I like the way he lays it out there. Like, hey, we're going to wrestle with this. I'm already wrestling. So I think that's healthy. But at the same time, like, just because he says something that is a little bit different, try not to let it get you off track of what the whole design of this study and this book is. Because I think there's things that come later that help blend in with, like, this chapter. It does feel kind of, or at least that day of that chapter, it feels a little bit different. Mm. But I think as you keep reading, I think it helps to blend in a little bit more of what his intent is and his desire.
So don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
That would have been faster. Yeah.
Yeah.
But maybe people don't know what that means. So yeah, that's what that saying means.
Yeah. I think it's really good that we're encountering some of these questions because it means people aren't just accepting everything that they read as gospel. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's mm-hmm. really trying to process and think through. And I think that's healthy. And mm-hmm. I think that's good that some of these discussions are being had in small groups and throwing it out to us on the podcast so we could talk about it. And maybe for other listeners out there that haven't been wrestling, maybe some of these things that we've been talking about today will spark some questions, spark some interest, and go a little bit deeper now too. So I think it's good that people are throwing these questions to us so that we can throw it out to the rest of our church and the rest of the people that are listening. Because I do know that there are some people that listen that are not a part of our church, but it will start helping people to go deeper in their faith. Mm-hmm. And chew on some of the meat and really mature.
I did want to bring one more thing up before we close. When we were prepping, we mentioned or we were discussing the idea of people having different levels or different or how to describe it now, but like that glory to glory type of thing. Like there's different levels of, okay, things are good in heaven, but there still could be like, oh, you're at a higher level or you're at a higher level. And that's okay. There's no envy. There's no jealousy associated with that in that state. But we have different, there's just different levels or different depth to it. So and I, Dave, maybe you could share a little bit on that.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Well, you're the one that kind of, you brought it up. And you, I thought the way you described it, so I'll give you a little bit of time. The way you described it to me, I'm like, oh, I think that would be relatable for people.
I think one of the things that we think about when we are, okay, I don't want to, I keep going to this we or,
yeah.
I think one of the things that's portrayed to us about heaven is that it's kind of stagnant. Like you are what you are. There's not growth. Right. And so even when we have this picture of like the garden or things like that, it's like, oh, everything was perfect. But the Bible actually doesn't say that it was perfect. It just says that it was good. Mm. Right. And so because it was good, there were still tasks for them to do. There were still things for them to do to extend what was in the garden to the rest of the world. That's why the Bible says, right, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth. Right. So it's to take the aspects of the garden and take it to the rest of the world. Right. And so there is an aspect of growth. There's an aspect of things aren't just going to be the same every single day, right? And I think sometimes when we have our picture of heaven, that's kind of feels kind of like it would be boring. Like, oh, it's just going to be the same thing every single day. It's gonna. But I think as I've been processing it and thinking about it, is like I think that there is going to be a level, some level of growth and some level of like mystery to it. So it's going to be an intriguing place. So in regarding this levels thing that Kyle was talking about, one of the things that I was thinking about was for when we think about like a child and their capacity to love, we wouldn't say, oh, this child can't love. And then all of a sudden they get to a certain point and now they can, right? We would say, okay, their capacity to love is love, but it's not the same as an adult's capacity to love. And as they mature, their capacity to love grows, right? And so I think in a similar way for us, in heaven, there's going to be these different levels in terms of our capacity. So someone who, on their deathbed, receives the Lord, when they get to heaven, they're going to be in a certain place in their character.
It says in the Bible that heaven rejoices because of that. That's an awesome thing.
Yes, it is an awesome thing. In their character, they're going to be in a certain place. Mm-hmm. And someone like Pastor L, who's been serving the Lord in his whole life and, you know,
tortured
persecuted and all these things, just in his character, he's in a different place. He's in a different starting place. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the cool thing in my mind is that for eternity, there's opportunities for us to grow into that. Right. And so it's not like, okay, this is where you were when you died. Yeah, he's gonna experience a level of joy. He's gonna experience a level of love. He's gonna experience a level of the fruit of the Spirit. But as time progresses in heaven, I'm just saying I'm thinking. Yeah. I'm not. Don't take this as gospel or anything. There's gonna be a growth that occurs where we can go from glory to glory.
Okay, so even you describing it now is more in depth than when we started. So I had a different view in my mind, and as you're describing, I'm like, oh, okay, that's stretching for me to view it that way, because I'm like, oh, I've never wrestled with that. I've wrestled with it when we enter heaven, where we enter at different levels, but then I haven't really thought of, oh, is that stagnant? Does it stay that? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure the answer on that, but I think it's good to even like bring that up to see like, oh yeah, so we don't know some of these things, and that's okay, and we can wonder about it, but we don't have to get stuck, or we don't have to like make it like where it just limits us as well.
You guys did a good job.
Well, because I thought, okay, for me in the by Jesus is talking to the disciples, and he's saying like, he says you, which I'm thinking it's the 12 disciples, because he says you're going to be on the 12 thrones judging the 12 tribes of Judah. And I'm like, or 12 tribes of Israel. And then I'm like, oh, I don't want that job. Like, I'm not qualified for that. Mm. So, I mean, I think there's different, I'm like, wow, that's a big responsibility. But I feel like when we're in that place, we're going to be able to say like, oh, wow, they're the right person for that like they, that I'm so glad they're doing that versus like, why didn't I get that? Or why? Cause I think we're going to know like, oh no, I'm where I belong and I'm doing what I'm meant to be. I do think that the part I wrestle with a little bit is at the judgment seat. Cause I think that's where I think there's regret and there's like, oh, I could have done more. But I think that doesn't carry forward into heaven. Mm-hmm. But I think there's that moment of like, and then, so for me, that's convicting somewhat. Like I don't want that to be any bigger than it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to do as much where I hear the Lord say, well done, good and faithful servant, with whatever he's given me. And I know already I'm short of that, but I want to do it as to the best that I can.
There's actually a part of me that can't wait for that moment in a weird way. Mm. And to me, how I can kind of reconcile that is if it is this before you enter into heaven, sitting in or standing before the Lord or judgment seat, when bad stuff is revealed, you're not going to be like, yeah, like I think just in general, it's not going to be, you know, so to have regret or to have the feeling of like, I wish I could have done more. I think it's almost just natural and almost like, I feel like the Lord would want you to have that. Otherwise it's like, not that you're proud of the bad stuff, but right. There's like this other like, okay, where is your heart in that too? Yeah. Right. And so I don't think it's wrong to almost like worry that there will be some things you're like, dang, like I wish I'd done this better or whatever. But part of that also could be, I think it does go with having a healthy fear of the Lord is not that you're going to disappoint the Lord, but yeah, you don't want to disappoint the Lord. You want to hear, you know,
Pastor Barry said we disappoint the Lord.
Yeah. And so,
but we don't fear the punishment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so to not, I guess it's just another way to keep yourself in check in regards, not like you're saying, not to make it bigger than it needs to be, but not downplay it. But it's just another way to help keep ourselves in check and trying to be more like Jesus and walk the ways that he does.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that this episode gave us some stuff to chew on. And,
so I'm guessing that we answered some questions and we probably brought up more questions.
Yeah. But like we said when we first started this series that, you know, the Lord is maturing us as a church and as people. And so we're moving from milk to meat. And when you have the meat, you got to chew on it. But really what that does is it helps us to mature in our faith. And so we probably opened up a whole can of worms for everybody. And if you want to talk to us about it, you are welcome to come on the podcast and talk to us about it. We're excited to have some of these types of conversations because really it's a sign that people are growing and people are maturing because they're wrestling. And so that's an exciting thing. Before we wrap, one of the things that I wanted to bring up, we are recording this on Wednesday. And today is actually Ash Wednesday.
Yes, it is.
And so throughout church history, Ash Wednesday was celebrated as 40 days before Easter. And so it kicks off the Lent season. And during the Lent season, it was a time for people to prepare for the Easter season in recognizing areas that they wanted the Lord to free them from, right? And so it's kind of the moving from slavery to freedom where it's kind of representative of like the wilderness, right? And wandering around the wilderness and then going into the promised land. Mm-hmm. And Easter is the promised time for us of new life. And so recognizing the areas that the Lord wants to free us from our old life and set us free in the new life. And so for a lot of people, what that looks like is it looks like seeking the Lord and asking him if there's something that he wants them to set free from. And going without that for that time until Easter. And so just wanted to bring it up because it's not something that we typically celebrate or something that we typically talk about in the Protestant church. It's generally, it's more of a Catholic thing, but throughout church, we talked about it earlier, you know, recognizing church history. And so for a majority of church history, this was a practice that everyone participated in. And so if that's something that you feel like you want to be a participant in, today's a good day to wrestle with that, wrestle with the Lord, and see if there's something that he wants to set you free from. Kyle, did you have something you wanted to say?
Before you went into that, but, well, I was just going to just remind people that, yeah, if this was inspiring for you to hear these questions, like, if you have questions, send them in so that we can try to address them. I mean, we'll do our best, but I think it's really just a way for us to help other people chew on it just like we are. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, you guys did a good job of researching and preparing.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what kind of feedback we get.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. We appreciate everybody. Like we said, if you have questions, you can either come on the podcast, ask them, you can email them to us, or you could talk to us in person on Sunday. So until next time, may you experience God's heart for you to flourish in every season.